Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Premier League Tonight podcast. I was joined at the Liberty Stadium by Glenn Hoddle, Chris Sutton and Swansea's own John Hartson. On this week's pod, we were also joined by Leon Britton as Swansea was sucked back into the relegation battle after that 1-0 defeat to Chelsea. It's four games undefeated for West Brom's Darren Moore as the Baggies give themselves a small glimmer of hope and look to stay in the Premier League. And Mark Hughes picked up three crucial points as he kept Southampton's survival hopes alive with a win over Bournemouth. Southampton's former manager, Claude Puel, has had an up-and-down season with the Foxes, currently in ninth, but after a 5-0 loss to Palace, the fans have started to turn. And finally, in a week which saw Iniesta announce he could never play against Barcelona, Mo Salah scored against Roma and Alexis Sanchez played against Arsenal on Sunday. So we take a look at times when a fan favourite has returned to haunt his former club. Let's just start with the results from today. And it's safe to say that the results today have just blown it wide open, haven't they?
Without a doubt. I think Southampton have dragged also West Ham, you've got to say, and Huddersfield into the scenario big time. There'll be some pressure there. West Ham have got a massive game, haven't they, against Manchester City at home. They haven't done well recently in that one, but so they're going to be in it. I think a lot of it is the fixtures. We've looked at the fixtures a little bit. It's who they've got to play, where they've got to go. And that, I agree with Chris. I think Swansea's safe.
Okay.
The fixtures more than anything.
We will have a look at the fixtures in great detail throughout the show. Just very briefly, while we have the table there, explain why you don't think Chelsea made the top four.
Because Tottenham have three home games, and they have to lose or drop a lot of points. I think Liverpool, Chelsea play Liverpool. Liverpool they have a better goal difference, I think, off memory.
Yeah, correct.
And I just think
it's right there on the telly, which is helpful,
well,
obviously.
Not really looking, it's just knowledge, Jake.
Amazing.
It's all in there. Just a bridge too far.
Yeah, OK, and let's have a look at the bottom. Look, no one's safe really from 10th downwards, and you really do have to start looking, as you've mentioned, John, at Huddersfield and Brighton. It's their fixtures, not their points, that's the big concern for them.
I think Watford, Bournemouth and Palace are safe. I think it's from maybe Brighton down. Possibly Brighton is safe for me. I think probably West Ham. They've got an awful lot to do. The teams that are there for Watford and Bournemouth to be dragged into that. But it's a case of Southampton now. We've got a relegation battle on the back of Southampton finally getting a win today.
OK, right, let's get on with it then. Let's hear from some West Brom fans. They've avoided the drop just about today. Remember, if Swansea had won this game, West Brom would be down. They're not. Let's hear from their fans after today's result.
Natalie, just been to Newcastle v West Brom. We've won 1-0. Looks like we're probably still going down, but restoring a bit of pride under Big Dave, getting a bit of pride and passion for the shirt back.
Another win for Albion under Darren Moore. He continues to do a brilliant job. He's really showing up Alan Pardew and Tony Pulis's results this season.
Right, give him the job, don't you think, Darren Moore?
Give him the job. Well, do you know, I was just speaking to Glenn off air about that. He's building momentum, is a crowd favourite, but would they trust him to, they're going to go down,
Would who trust him?
Would the board trust him in the Championship to get them back up?
Well, if he wins football matches, that's the trust, isn't it? And that's what he's doing.
Yeah, well, he's won football matches, really. The pressure's been off because West Brom have probably almost been down in the last couple of weeks, really. But I think give him the job. I think he's done ever so well. Obviously, he's got a little bit of a reaction from the players. He's been working under Alan Pardew. He knows the club. The fans really, really have taken to him. They like him. But it'd be interesting to see what the majority of the fans actually think, whether they would want him as manager. But I think give him a chance.
It's always difficult when it's caretaker. You're not under the immense pressure that if it's your job and every responsibility is on your shoulders, you've got a 3-year contract, whatever it may be. And the players feel that as well. So the release, the chains are off. There's a little bit, yes, we feel we're going down. But also the manager hasn't got the pressure. So maybe keep him as a caretaker for a year. you get better results.
But what more has you got, interesting?
What more
has you got to do to get the job?
Yeah, I know, but that's why it's dangerous. It's very difficult. We've seen it before, where you give a caretaker the job and suddenly it's a different job, put it that way.
He was asked about it today. Let's just quickly hear what he has to say about the job.
The job, it really is, and I'm speaking openly, pure here now, it's just the next game. I've not thought about any job, anything. I'm answering a situation with the football club, and it generally is, honestly, it really is. It's just on to the next game, and that's how I've approached it. And we've got a real tough game for the following week coming up, a real big game and a tough match, and we're just focusing on that one.
I love Darren. I think he's a great bloke, but not thought about the job, really. That's all he's thinking about, isn't it?
Well, what he has done is he's put a seed now into the decision makers, that seed of doubt. You know, they probably thought he's going to see it through to the end of the season. We're down. Well, they are down anyway. I don't think they'll trust him enough because they will want to bounce back first time. You know, they'll have all the money, they'll try and keep the squad together and bounce back, and they'll think he's too inexperienced. That is my view. I think they'll go for a Michael Appleton, somebody who's been there before. I think he has he's
like
the chief executive before, so they will go for someone they trust and who's had a bit of experience.
Would Michael Appleton be well received by West Brom fans, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's been there. He's worked with the academy there. He's left West Brom and he's had several jobs in the meantime. He's got a lot more experience than Darren Moore. You know, he's a shout. But I just think it's always a gamble, whichever way you go. There's no guarantees that any manager is going to bring West Brom back up at the first attempt next year. So why not gamble on Darren Moore?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's the point I was trying to make. He's planning for one game at a time. Yeah. It's different when you're planning for a season. That's when the pressure's on.
And it's hard to know, isn't it, whether this is him doing an amazing job or whether this is circumstance, the change of manager, the pressure's off, someone you like is coaching you, so you go and play well. Right, let's talk Southampton then. The result today, which has really changed the picture down the bottom of the Premier League. Let's hear from Joel, a Saints fan.
It's so important today, home to Bournemouth. If we don't win this, I think we're down. And I'd hate to go down against Bournemouth as well, because they're going to be saying this is a massive game. This is a massive game for us. And to be honest, we can't afford to lose more points at home. That was such an important game. A loss and I thought we'd be down. But due to the commitment of the players and Tadic's great performance, we've managed to pull through and get the win. I thought on the balance of play, we deserve to win. And you could tell that the fans and the players really needed this because the atmosphere and all the passion was just fantastic today.
You know, it's amazing what momentum at the right time can do. As things stand right now, would you rather be Southampton, who've picked up that win today and are feeling brilliant, but they're a point below Swansea? Would you rather be Swansea, who've been beaten here by Chelsea and are now looking over their shoulders?
At this moment tonight, you'd probably rather be Southampton. Tomorrow morning, you'll wake up and think you'd much rather be Swansea. I just feel with Southampton, if they do stay up, and it's a big if still, that they've really gotten away with one, and the whole structure, the board really need to have a good look at themselves. Les Reed, there's been some very, very poor decision-making. They've given Mark Hughes a puncher's chance, you know, very little chance of staying up. He's gone in, he's looked for an instant reaction. He hasn't really got it, but that win today just drags Swansea closer to them, and that game's going to be monumental.
I think Southampton, though, Chris, I think they've got good players.
Yep.
You know, probably, you know, that, as I know it's a cliche, but too good to go down. I think when he left Stoke, you know, and then he goes back in at Southampton, I think he looked at Southampton's group and gone, I've got a better group of players here. You look at the strikers, you know, Charlie Austin, Gabbiadini, you know, Shane Long, Tadic. I think they've got good players.
Tadic, I couldn't understand last week leaving him out in that semi-final. Tadic is a top player who could move to a very big club, and I think do very well playing with better players around him. But it's the longer term picture as well. You can't, Claude Puel last year, you know, gets the League Cup finals, that's what he does. I don't say, over a long period of time, you can't keep selling the amount of players they've been selling.
That wasn't the issue. That wasn't really the issue.
It comes back at you, Chris. In the end of the day, you got to hold on to a few of them.
But I don't think it's come back to haunt them like it has the change of manager. I think they were fantasies. You know, they wanted a better style. This is Southampton we're talking about. I think Puel had to sell Wanyama, Mane, still finished eighth, still got in a cup final. And they wanted a dream to play this fantasy football, a better brand of football, and that didn't materialise. And then the board sat on the hands, and then the defeat against Newcastle was the catalyst because the fans turned and you know, they made the decision very late because I think they just naively believed that Pellegrino would somehow turn it around while sitting it all and watching it going down the pan week in and week out.
Claude Puel should have stayed.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, let's have a look at the remaining games then for Southampton. They've got Everton, they've got Swansea, they've got Manchester City. It makes the game against Swansea here, the game of the season, really, for these two sides.
I can't believe you asked Chris what position you'd rather be in, Swansea or Southampton. Look at them fixtures. Everton away, Man City last game of the season, and an away game here to Swansea who are fighting for their lives. You would much rather be in Swansea's position looking at them fixtures.
Well, they're still tough fixtures, aren't they? Everton, Everton, you know, away. They've just had an away win. OK, there was problems there with Sam, but I think they've got momentum. The Swansea one here, OK, that's going to be a battle. But I think the Man City one will be the difficult one as well. It really will. They're just flying. They've won the league and they'll want to finish on the winner.
How concerned are you for Huddersfield and Brighton? Because they've sort of been out of this conversation for a while and suddenly you have to look at their remaining fixtures to put them firmly back in the conversation for relegation.
No, I don't think Brighton. I really don't see Brighton. I think they've got enough points as it stands. I don't see them in the mix. Huddersfield, with their goal difference, I think that they are in big trouble.
Big enough trouble to get relegated.
Yes, I do.
They won't take another point looking at them three fixtures.
The key thing there as well, Chelsea are in the cup final. If they can't get top four by the time they play because Spurs have won or whatever, that might be on their minds. Arsenal, if they get through to Europa, that'll be certainly on their minds. So they're not as frightening as they might look on paper.
They certainly look frightening on paper.
Yeah, they do.
Wenger will want to win his last league game in charge. Well, yeah, but he still will want to go out with a bang. You know, Chelsea will still be in fighting and think they've got a chance. I think that, you know, they're in a bit of trouble.
Well, you think they're in trouble. Here's an insight into how the Huddersfield fans feel at the moment.
This is a big opportunity for Town to get some points on the board and push us over that line, keep us in the Premier League, and we just haven't taken it at all. We were very poor today, very poor. We haven't given them anything like enough to think about. If I'm being honest, I think we've run out of steam. This squad hasn't got much Premier League quality in it, so to be in the position we're in is nothing short of miraculous. But as I say, I think they've given all they can this season and I'm not sure there's much left to give. We're just going to have to hope that there's three sides worse than us come the final day.
So he says they've run out of steam and he's a Huddersfield fan. I need three names, the three teams who are going down as things stand tonight.
I'll go West Brom. West Brom are gone. Stoke. And I'll put Huddersfield in there as well. Okay. So West Brom, Stoke, Huddersfield.
I'm going the three that are there now. I'll put Southampton down, but the other two as well. The three that are there now, I can't see them getting out of it.
Is that us out of time?
No. There's definitely time for you.
I'm the same as John. I think Huddersfield.
Huddersfield are gone.
Yeah,
or will go. OK, yeah. Right, thank you for that. Friend of the show, Leon Britton, is back for more punishment. Haven't been on before. Nice to see you.
Evening.
He was just moaning about the fact he still has to go out there and warm down. Were you doing your shuttle run? Surely they let you off, no?
You would have thought at 35 they'd let me off, but no, been out there doing the shuttle runs as normal when you don't come on, so one of the joys of being a sub.
Right, lots to talk about. I know you've just been in the dressing room with the guys. Just give us an idea of the mood in there just now.
I think the mood's a bit frustrated in there. I don't think the team's too down. I think we've done well, especially in the second half. We pushed and pushed. I think last week was disappointing, but I think we felt the performance was pretty OK today. We thought if we play like that in the next three games that we'll have a chance of getting the results that we need to stay in the league.
Right, because the feeling in the studio was that there just wasn't enough cutting edge and bite going forward, wasn't it? That was the sort of feeling for you two.
Certainly first half, I think, you know, it was hard to match them going, you know, wing backs and matching them today. Yeah. And I think sometimes Chelsea know that system
like the back of their hand. But second half, he went into a back four, and then certainly the last 20 minutes, they really put them on the back. And they got the crowd going. It was a long time for the crowd to get going. And they could have got back in that game in that last 20 minutes without a doubt. It was, they got bodies in the box, and that's what I think you expected when you're at home to get bodies. Even although Chelsea are a very good side,
I think as well the goal set you back a little bit. You know, I think you want to try and come out at the start a little bit more urgency, get on the front foot, put Chelsea under pressure a bit. All of a sudden you're a goal down, you're on the back foot, it gives them a huge lift. But I did feel there was a little bit of lack of urgency from the front two in the first half. Nobody willing to run in behind. I thought the ball came off the front two far too easily, not allowing Swansea to move up the pitch. But in the second half, you're fantastic in the second half.
I think Glenn's right. I think when we went to the four at the back and with wide men, we started to open up a bit more, and we got into the final third. Like you say, the first half was a bit more in front of Chelsea's back five, if you like. We wasn't really, like you say, threatening too much behind. Frustrating thing was we didn't really cause Courtois too many problems. Got into some decent positions. Wayne Routledge had a chance. Tom Carroll flashed one wide. But we didn't really work Courtois as much as we'd liked. But, you know, like you say, I think you go into this game trying to start well, 10, 15 minutes, get the crowd going. But it kind of knocks the stuffing out of you a little bit conceding so early.
You've used the word frustrating four or five times. You've only been on the show about 2 minutes. Is that the feeling when you have been at the club for so long and they're staring potential relegation in the face here, and you're watching on, you're not out there able to have an impact on the game?
Yeah, of course, it's difficult when you're on the bench. Obviously, you want to be out there on the pitch having an influence on the game and the team. But obviously, you know, we're senior players. We have to make sure we're in the change room and trying to pick the boys up at half-time if they're a bit down or after the game. You're just trying to have your input in the game from that side of things. But of course, listen, when the team's losing like that, you want to be able to get on the pitch and be able to do affect the game. Obviously, from the side, you can't really do it, but the best part to be for a player is out there.
It happened last season, didn't it? When when Paul came in, Paul Clement, you were back in the team for the last 5, 6, 7 games.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the results.
Maybe you should remind the manager of that. Knock on the door and say, Gaffer, I played the end of last season and we got 10 points. I'll go and tell him.
Yeah, if he's still about, you can pop down. But no, it worked out well last year. Obviously, I stepped in for the last 4 or 5 games and we had an upturn in results. But listen, we've still got 3 massive games, and whoever plays, you know, all the players know how big it is to the club.
The Southampton result before, was there anything there? Because if they'd have lost the game, you can imagine your guys would have been right on that front for even a point would have been fantastic. If they lost, they win and you go, okay, game on. You know,
we had a similar situation here last year. I think for the Everton game, it was about the same time of the season, and Hull had played just before us, and we just went out to warm up for our 5:30 kickoff, and Hull had lost. Uh-huh. And the atmosphere in the stadium, atmosphere in the changing room was electric, like, you know. So it gave everyone a lift. Obviously, going out for the warm up, we see the result. But like we always say, I know it's boring, but we have to take care of ourselves. You know, of course, it would help if Southampton dropped points today, but we can't rely on other teams to drop points. No. It's about us picking up points. Obviously, today we're disappointed we haven't, but we go again next Saturday against Bournemouth.
Take us inside the training facility. Tell us what Carlos has been like since he came here, his methods, the way he inspires the players, because he certainly had an impact, hasn't he?
Well, he's had a massive impact. I think when he came into the football club, he was struggling severely in confidence, bottom of the league. You know, he took the job, and his energy, his enthusiasm, his passion, straight away rubbed off to the players. The atmosphere has been very relaxed as such, considering the situation we're in. I think also he's very good tactically. He looks at the opposition. He brought his guys with him. He brought four people with him who look at the opposition. And then from that, he puts his game plan together. And I think he's very astute tactically. And he's done a great job where you see where we was and where we are today. You know, with 3 games left outside the relegation zone. I think any Swansea fan would have took that when Carlos come in.
And what's he like with you guys? Does he like meetings? Does he get you together? Are you doing double sessions every day? Is he working you hard?
The meetings are great. Like, you know, you see his press conferences. He's great in his meetings.
Same with you, like, is it?
He's, you know, that's what you see on the telly, and what we see in is exactly the same in his meetings. But he's very passionate. You know, he's very enthusiastic. You see, you know, his meeting today, he's full of energy, telling us to make it so hard for Chelsea and how much it means to our families and the football club. And like I say, I think that really rubs off. But he's great around the training ground. He's really lifted the place in a real dark time for the club.
I think as well, Jake, he had a lot to prove when he first came in, because Nobody fancied him whatsoever. He'd just been sacked at
the Championship.
They were middle of the table, not doing particularly well, a lot of injuries, Sheffield Wednesday. But he came to Swansea. I remember, I think I did a gig on a radio show, and people are going, what on earth are Swansea doing? Why are they appointed a manager that's just been sacked? So really, he was under pressure straight away. He had a lot to prove. He came in. You went on a fantastic... won your first game at Watford, came from a goal behind. You got a great start. And then, so for me, he's done extraordinary on the back of how much he had to prove as well.
I think you've got to give credit to the board and the chairman for that, you know. I think over the years, they've made some really good decisions in managers, but obviously in recent years we've chopped and changed. But to give Carlos the job, like you say, a manager who around Christmas time was sacked from a Championship team.
What was the WhatsApp group like among the players when a middle of the table sacked Championship manager got announced?
I think players understand that when you're bottom of the league, it's difficult. It's going to be difficult to attract managers because people see the situation you're in. So
we're just bottom, 5 points adrift.
It's difficult, isn't it?
It's gone almost.
It's amazing to think the run that you've put together, and you've worked so hard. He's done such a great job, and he has. The players have, the fans have, everyone, and you're still just 1 point above that line. It's a miracle what you've done, but you're still back. Playing like you have been, and the points you picked up over the weeks, expect them to be out clear.
And is there a seriousness to him? Is there a sort of anger? Because we see, as we do in the media, really happy-go-lucky, relaxed Carlos, using all these strange phrases. Some players don't need to be scared of their manager, don't they?
No, I think he has got that side to him for sure. Yeah, he said to us when he first come in that I've got two faces. I've got the nice one, but I've also got the other side, and you don't want to see the other side. I think we all know with the manager there's that line. We can have the joke and we can have the fun, but at the same time, when we get on the training ground, it's serious work.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, we've seen it. We've seen it when we've maybe not performed well, or someone maybe in trainings larking about. He comes down on them, and we know there's that line that you don't cross. I think you have to have that as a manager. You can't, like you say, I know you see on the press conferences and the phrases he comes out with, but of course there's a serious.
What makes him angry?
Sloppiness, I think, the sloppiest that we've shown in some of the games recently. But I think, he just sets standards on the training ground and he wants us to meet them. And if we don't meet them on the training ground on a daily basis, that sets him off a little bit. So the boys have raised the level in the last 3 or 4 months since he's been there.
And what's this season been like for you personally? Is it kind of, you've had a bit of everything, including taking charge of the place?
No, it's been obviously a really busy year for me, or eventful as such. I've been frustrated with injuries. I've had a lot of small injuries, not long-term injuries, maybe a calf injury that keeps me out for a couple of weeks. I come back, pick up maybe a groin injury that keeps me out for a couple of weeks. I've never been consistently training, which has been very frustrating. But obviously I had the stint of 2 games as caretaker manager, which was great. The club rang me, the chairman asked me if I was willing to do that, which...
Any doubts?
No, not really. I've been at the club a long time, so I said to the chairman, any way I can help, and he said, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to, but I'd like you to take it. And I said, of course I'll do that. But then after 5-0 defeat at Anfield, I thought it was quite tough.
When Leon was given the job for a couple of games, I was the first person to phone him. I said, look, do you want to try and come and help you out a little bit?
Yeah. Did he take you up on the
never
offer?
Never got back to
what? This is awkward, isn't it? This is really awkward.
Yeah. It was more like wishing him good luck.
Yeah, okay. Fine. Should we skirt over that? Did you do those 2 games, though, and think, I want more of that? Or did you do them and think, nah?
I think it was a bit of both. I did enjoy it to a certain extent. It was great. It was obviously a lot of pressure. There was a lot of surrounding things that you had to sort out, which was quite stressful at the time. But going into the games, I did enjoy it, looking at the opposition, the training, how we're going to try and affect them, how we're going to try and stop them. The Crystal Palace game where we got a draw, which I enjoyed. But obviously it was difficult going to Anfield and losing 5-0. You're standing there and we're playing poorly and we're losing that game. But
how many days before that game did you get the call?
I think I took the team on the Thursday and we played Palace on the Saturday.
So when you get a phone call from the club where you've been for so many years and they say, right, we now want you to be the manager, what do you do the next morning when you go in at 9 o'clock? Like, are you there early with a tracksuit on thinking, right, what do I do now? Are you copying the previous manager's training and just doing the same things because that's what the lads are used to? How did you approach it?
I think I just tried to, obviously the players were down, I think just to try to make, not give the players too much information and try and change things too quickly. I mean, in 2 days before a game, it's impossible to start throwing loads of things at the players. It was just more, just try and make things
I feel weird though, suddenly you're the one standing up in front of them.
Of course, it's strange, but I have to be honest, the players were great with me. The players were fantastic. The chairman stood there in front of him and obviously explained the situation with Paul Clement leaving and that I'd be taking over as caretaker manager. But no, I think that the players were brilliant with me. They understood the situation. They took on board what I wanted them to do. But no, of course, it's a bit strange when all of a sudden you're sat in the changing room as a teammate and then all of a sudden you have to pick 11 players and you have to leave some out the starting 11, some out of the squad. Obviously, it's a difficult situation, but you know that's what I knew I was getting into when I took the caretaker role.
But also, Leon, you'd worked under Roberto Martinez here, you know, as your manager, Gary Monk as well. You were very friendly with Gary. So did you tap into what you learnt off them? They were friends with them, and also your manager, you know, for them couple of games. Did you look back and think, I'm going to maybe tap into some of the things I learnt from them too?
Well, yeah, I was lucky in that respect. Obviously, two managers there, two ex-teammates. He went from players to manager at the football club. So, no, I did speak to them and try to pick up a bit of experience from themselves, what they'd done, what they changed, what they didn't change, their training methods and the way they acted around the players. I think I'd be a fool not to take that on board because both managers have gone on to do very well. So I was lucky in that respect that I could call upon them on the end of the phone or, you know, call upon the experience I've had of working with them.
And you were sort of publicly saying, look, I don't really want to take over the manager's job at the moment. Would you have liked it if they'd have turned around and said, you know what, two games becomes rest of the season? Would that have appealed to you at the time?
Not really. I was being honest. I knew from the start that I just wanted to take the caretaker role until the club found a suitable replacement for Paul. Even if they offered it to me for the end of the season, I probably would have said, you know, I don't want to do that. I didn't think I was ready to take the role on the full-time basis or for the end of the season. I didn't think I was ready for that. So I told the chairman that I was there to help the club in the short-term period. But for me, at that time and that point, I just don't think it was the right move for me.
Is it giving you a little flavour for management later on?
Yeah.
Did it give you, that little buzz that you thought, actually, I can do this long-term?
Yeah, I think it did. I think I've been lucky that I've worked under some very good managers who have gone on to do very well. And it did give me a little bit of a flavour then, two games and the training, the build-up to the games and dealing with team selections and the training and everything else that surrounds being a manager. Obviously, there's a lot, you know, when you step into it, you realise there's a lot of things you have to deal with that probably as a player that you don't see, you know, you take for granted as a player when you go out for training or you travel to games that everything's done.
It's like having a job, isn't it, for the first time?
It is a little bit like that, yeah. And that's why I went back to being a player.
Exactly. Much easier. And obviously you made the decision to bring on Ayew off the bench. He got the equaliser against Crystal Palace. So if they stay up by a single point, you are responsible for Swansea's survival. So whatever the gaffer's getting as a survival bonus, you need half at least.
Let's hope it don't go down to goal difference because I lost 5-0 at Anfield.
Imagine if you had a striker coach as well. Could have been very different.
Absolutely.
There was a tweet that you sent earlier in the week, which I thought was really nice. Let's have a quick look at it. It was talking about sort of throwbacks, and you said throwback nearly 20 years when Arsenal offered me terms as an apprentice, turning it down to join West Ham, thinking I would get a better opportunity. I love the letter as well. How is a letter from Liam Brady not enough to get you to sign for Arsenal? Was the 400 quid a week the problem?
No, it wasn't. At the time, Arsene Wenger had just joined the club. I think it was in 98 there. I think it was maybe 2 years previously joined the football club, and he just started to bring young players from all over Europe and all over the world, really. And I just felt at that time, West Ham had just won the Youth Cup, had a fantastic team with Joe Coles, Carricks and the likes, and obviously Rio and Frank in the first team. I just felt that my future was better suited at West Ham. I might get the better opportunity to break through into the first team than I would at Arsenal. I'd been at Arsenal from 9 years old to I was 16, so I was there a long time, but I just felt for my future at that point, West Ham would be the better move, but it didn't work out because it didn't make an appearance in the first team.
Just think, Leon, you could have cleaned my boots instead of Ashley Cole at that particular time. Ashley Cole used to clean my boots. You'd have joined that sort of that group of players, yeah. Ashley's age, if you'd gone.
Oh, it's a shame. It's a shame because it's a great club. I loved Arsenal.
Do you allow yourself to have regrets? Do you wish you'd done it, or are you sitting here now thinking I've had a great career? How can I regret anything?
No, I think I'm happy with my career. I think moments like that, you look back, or when I left Swansea to go Sheffield United, it's at that moment, you know, when you make them decisions, it's easy to sit back at 35 and say, oh, I should have done this or I could have done that. But at that moment in time, you looked at it and you felt that was the right decision, and you have to live and die by them decisions. I wouldn't change anything in my career. I think I've been, you know, very fortunate to have the career I've had.
And how does £400 a week compare to your first salary, Glenn? Can you remember?
God, yeah, £16 I think I was on.
Suddenly that seems like a good amount of money, £400 a week.
Oh yeah, but mum and dad got an allowance on top of that, I think, about £20, yeah.
Nice. What about you, John?
Apprentice wage at Luton, £29.50. That's what it was. And then I went to Arsenal at 19. They got a little bit more than that.
And when we talk about regrets, do you guys allow yourself to have those? Have you got anything that stands out in your career that you think, that was it, I should have done that, or I shouldn't have made that decision or not?
I think what Leon said there about, you know, at that particular time, you know, you got to go with your heart, you got to go with what you feel is right. But I have got a few regrets. I regret training ground incidents and things like that. But
which one stands out?
Well, I think the obvious one. I think the one at West Ham. It was the wrong reaction. I shouldn't have reacted the way that I did. I paid the price for it. I was suspended. I was plastered all over the media. Yeah. And I always felt that went before me slightly. You know, whenever...
Well, after that, you think?
Yeah, I thought it went before me because I was aggressive and, I liked to back into players. But, you know, it was an unsavoury incident. And I always felt whenever people spoke about John Hartson, they'd say, well, yeah... You know, decent guy, holds the ball up well, decent, good in the air, scores goals. But did you see that? I always felt, you know, I had to sort of get over that before I could prove myself again. So I regret certain things, but in terms of the moves that I got, you know, I had some good moves during my career. I don't regret going to any particular club rather than another club. But I think most people would go through a career, 20-year career, you know, and struggle not to have a regret.
Yeah. Glenn?
No, I think I was lucky in many ways. I wanted to test myself abroad, and there was a stage where I nearly went when I was 21, at 24, and injuries sort of took me away. So that was one thing I was really yearning for. I would have been regretful if I hadn't have done that. And eventually I went a little bit later in my career to Monaco with Arsenal. But listen, in the end, you make your decisions on the back of what you think's right at that time. You can't look back in life and think there's regrets there, because your life is panned out as you plan it. You create your own life.
Listen, thanks ever so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Your sort of immediate future plans, what's going on? Have you had conversations with the club? Have you got a plan for next season yet that you can tell us, or one you can't tell us?
Well, obviously my situation is running out of my contract at the end of the season. I had an option to extend if I hit a certain amount of games, which I haven't. So I need to make a decision whether I carry on playing, whether I finish here and maybe stay at the football club in another way, or I move away. So obviously I need to really be thinking about that, which I have done in recent months. But I'm sure in the next week or so, I think we'll make the decision and we'll release it and let everyone know.
Okay. Well, look, thanks for joining us. Whatever happens, very best of luck. And you are welcome on PLT anytime. We were talking about regrets. You didn't get the chance to join in.
Well, good. Yeah.
Now's your moment.
Well, how long have you got? You haven't got long enough,
time.
Jake, to be honest. Looking back, I've got plenty of regrets. We discussed the England stuff last time. We don't need to go through that again. My career panned out the way it did. There were certain things that, I didn't want to leave Celtic. That was Gordon Strachan's fault, without apportioning blame. And I regret it.
Tell us how that panned out then. What happened there?
Well, that was a contractual situation and we had a falling out, Jake. And
can you go into
leaving
more detail?
He turned me over a contract which I'd agreed with the previous manager.
Verbally,
basically.
Right.
That was the long and the short of it. But he did a good job at Celtic. When they were sort of cutting back a little bit. But I didn't want to leave. I'd had five, great years at Celtic. It's a great club. John knows it extremely well. And that was disappointing, but,
And what are you like in that situation? Do you sort of accept your fate, or do you beg him to keep you on? Are you
I didn't know. There certainly wasn't any begging. That was a big
convincing?
Disagreement.
Cajoling?
No, it wasn't convincing, because I was wronged at the time. There was a deal in place, and that didn't materialise. He had his own reasons. I just wish he would have been more upfront.
Yeah.
And
have you made peace now?
Yeah, I like Gordon. We work together on the television and we get on as long as I agree with him.
As long as he doesn't do anything that you don't like. Anything else?
No, not really. I'll have a think and get back to you.
Brilliant. I'm sure there's more. loads of talk online about Leicester at the moment. Let's just share a few of these. Liz, who's a Leicester fan, he's got to go. Players aren't interested. Talking about Claude Puel. James Scott, it's exciting me. We might finally be getting rid of Puel. Hashtag Puel out. Basha Broughton, can't wait for us to get stuffed 3-1 next week by West Ham and the Puel in brigade say, just give him time. So, Claude Puel is under pressure. That was an embarrassing defeat by Crystal Palace today. 1 point from the last four games. Is he going to lose his job at Leicester as well now?
I hope he doesn't. I really do. I mean, it's a pattern for him. It's a similar pattern that he had at Southampton. I think that result there, you notice they had a man sent off at 54 minutes and they've scored three late goals, Palace. Mm-hmm. They were trying to, with 10 men, you're 2-0 down, trying to get that sort of back in the game maybe. You're going to be opened up and that's what's happened. And I think that's a bit unfair to sort of have that reaction after that. They'll say, yeah, it's been coming. Mm. But I think long term, what he did at Lille and what he's done in his career, if you look at him, I think in long term he'll get the job done right. He's trying to make them play a little bit more football.
Yeah.
I was with him a few weeks ago. He's trying to make them become a team that can become a little bit more with possession as well as hit people on the break when they're playing the top teams. And I think at the moment he just needs a bit more time.
I wonder though if this is about football or if this is about him, these problems that keep on occurring. When we talk about patterns in football, sometimes it's not a coincidence, is it?
No, I just think that there is so much short-termism now in football. And I understand Leicester won the Premier League and the fans want to return to that sort of level. The truth is Leicester are probably in ninth position where they should be. And I just think that the fans at Leicester need to get a little bit more. Not all the fans, of course, but these fans are calling for his head. I mean, it's madness. It is unrealistic. Give him time. I think he's done an OK job. Yes, the football may not have been as easy on the eyes as the supporters would have liked, but they're in ninth place. Mm. It's been a good season for Leicester.
Because we criticise football clubs and we criticise football for short-termism, but we're seeing it more and more, actually, from fans as well, aren't we? They're part of the conversation about, lost three, lost four, get rid. Football's not good enough.
Yeah, and you know, it's a winning business, isn't it? It's a winning, you know, you've got to win. Simple as that. If you're not winning, you're under pressure. And I think it's very difficult for managers to ask the team. It's difficult because sometimes when the team are totally safe, that Leicester have been safe now for about 2.5 months. Mm. You know, they're going to play Premier League football next season. You know, I think what's happened, I think, for me is that the Leicester players have down tools a little bit. They're almost on holiday. And for the manager to keep trying to get a turn out of them when they already know that they're safe, I think you've got a situation, you're at Leicester.
I think the advent of player power is another conversation for another Premier League tonight. But
plus, he's only brought one player in.
Yeah. Mm.
Let's be fair. He's looking for a longer picture to bring in what he wants in next year.
OK. The talk this week has been about Iniesta. He is leaving Barca and actually leaving Europe because he can't bear to face his former club. We'll hear from these three in a moment, but it got us thinking, who's broken your heart in football? Have a listen.
Van Saint-Étienne once told us that only love can break your heart, but us Watford fans found out in 2013 that small strikers signed from Bulldog Town for just £10,000 can break your heart just as easily. That's right, Super Kevin Phillips popped up for Crystal Palace to score the match-winning penalty in the playoff final against Crystal Palace. We thought it was all going so well. We'd had that incredible semi-final playoff against Leicester where Troy Deeney scored that memorable goal. We thought our name was on the playoff trophy, but there he was, Kevin Phillips, cool as a cucumber very near the end of the game to score that penalty in extra time. He broke our hearts.
A fan's favourite who came back to haunt Huddersfield Town on several occasions is Jordan Rhodes. He scored 40 goals in 45 games in League One to help fire us to promotion back to the Championship. And then we sold him to Blackburn for £8 million. It was a club record fee, but it was nowhere near enough for a player of that calibre. And he went on to prove that by scoring against us for Blackburn pretty much every time we came up against them, including a hat-trick against us at our place as well.
This season, you look at Glenn Murray playing back at Brighton, scoring 2 in 3, including the winner of the FA Cup. That's a bit of a pain.
But the worst one for me has to be Super Frank. Goes to Man City, comes back. We're playing against 10 men at the Etihad. Scores a last-minute equaliser. Hmm.
Did it ever bother you playing against former clubs?
Not really. I mean, you know, you're motivated for the club you play for, essentially. So I never had that feeling. It's not that you... Well, you do want to put one over on them, go back and maybe prove a point.
Even over Norwich?
Even at Norwich, Jake, I left and I scored within 4 minutes on my Norwich return. I ended up losing. Brilliant goal, Jake.
It was all right. I didn't like it much.
And John played for Celtic against Blackburn when the UEFA Cup tie, Graeme Souness famously said it was men against boys at Celtic Park. When they played us off the park, we beat them 1-0 and we went down to Blackburn. My old club had 5 years there and stuffed them out of sight, and I scored and I was really happy inside, but I didn't want to celebrate.
What do you think about this non-celebrating thing? Does it sit comfy with you?
Not really. It all depends, I think, how well you've done for the club. I think if you've spent, like Chris said, 5 years and you'd won a Premier League title there, you have some sort of affinity with the fans. Of course you do. But if you spend the odd season at a club, then celebrate like every other goal. But I can see why Chris wouldn't have celebrated, because, you know, he had a great time with them fans, the Blackburn fans.
What was it like when you played against Swansea, the town where you were born? Was that all right for you? Was it easy for you or not really?
Well, don't get me wrong, it was tough because Swansea City, we came to Upton Park, Swansea in the FA Cup, and we drew the game 1-1, and Swansea's, well, 5,000 Swansea travelling fans all singing my name. And we drew the game 1-1. Then we came back to the Vetch Field and we got beat 1-0.
Yeah.
I was a little bit subdued, I think, during the game. Don't get me wrong, if I'd got a chance, I would have done my best to put the chance away, because it's your professional.
Is there not a tiny bit of you, though, that just when the ball comes across and you're against your former club, just a thought flashes across your brain?
No. I'd have scored. If I'd have had the opportunity and I'd had the chance to score.
He's laughing at me. He's like, no.
I would have scored. And I never played for Swansea. I just grew up here all my life in Swansea. So big Swansea City supporter always, all my life. But if I'd have had the chance to score, I would have scored. But it was a difficult night.
You have to be totally professional. I mean, mine was slightly different. When Chelsea going back to Tottenham, I was player-manager. So that's slightly different as well, because you've got the responsibility of
the club. You never played against them as a player?
Yeah, I played against
Tottenham.
Them. Over at Tottenham, yeah, at White Hart Lane, at the Bridge. I remember the record, that Chelsea were proud of this record, beating Tottenham, and we were 1-0 down. And I'm warming up in front of the Spurs fans, and they're all singing, "I was damned if I do and damned if I don't." They're all singing, "You're Spurs and you know you are." Yeah. And I'm stretching and warming up. We're losing 1-0. And if I wave to them, my Chelsea fans are going to kill me. And I can't, you know, I'm getting stick because I'm
wave to everyone, no?
Yeah. And in the end, I think Dennis Wise popped. I came on and put a cross in right in front of them, put a late cross in. Then little Dennis Wise heads it in, and we keep that record as Chelsea.
Yeah,
and they're going berserk behind me. But
and you are doing what as Dennis Wise celebrates? Are you joining in? Are you part of the celebration?
Player manager. It was a massive point for us, and of course, yeah, you had to do it. You're professional. You put your head on. That's it. I went back to play for Monaco against Tottenham, but it was just a winter break that we had. So it was a friendly. That was a bit stranger. Yeah.
Lots of comments coming in. David McIntosh, one that both guests or two of you guests will remember, Henrik Larsson returning to Parkhead with Barcelona.
Yeah, he didn't celebrate either. They beat us 3-1, didn't they, on the night? Because Henrik scored, lobbed the goalkeeper, just ran back. And again, the affinity that he had with the Celtic fans, I wouldn't have expected Henrik to celebrate.
That's the only time we lost under Martin O'Neill at home.
And if you're playing against at the club where someone has played with you and now they're on the opposition, are you reminding them of that? Are you having a little word with them saying, come on, are you winding them up a bit, using a bit of your famous mental toughness, Chris?
No.
Nothing?
No, absolutely. You concentrate on the job in hand. You know, when he came back, it was an emotional night. But, you know, the focus was on us trying to beat a top Barcelona team. But it was sort of typical Henrik to come back and do that.
That's all for this week's PLT podcast. If you liked it, give us a subscribe and it'll be sent to your device every single week. We'll be back next week coming to you from Goodison Park as we're live on BT Sport on the 5th of May for Everton against Southampton. As ever, get in touch using hashtag PLTonight. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.